Welcome to Making Room, a podcast inspiring people to accelerate change by being a catalyst, honoring creativity, and acting with courage. We are making room for the greatest potential of our community.
Right, here we are. What is this, episode 5? You know, coming here on a Monday morning. Now we officially have a budget for hair, right, Shivani?
Me too, yes. I was not informed that we were going to use all of our video for that first one. I would have combed my hair a little bit, but.
Well, you all look phenomenal, and this is so awesome because we're learning so much. We're listening to the song beforehand, and I've been blown away at what's already happening. You know, our song by Brit Drazda and LP7, and now they're talking about publishing that to where it's going to be on Spotify and Apple. They've talked about an album, and so I've been blown away thus far on what we're learning, what we're seeing, and curious from you all, Shivani, maybe we'll start with you. Like, I know you also had a comment from your dad, and what is, thus far, like, what are you learning? What are you getting out of this process?
Yeah, well, I have to tell you, so I was listening to one of our episodes while I was grocery shopping the other day, and I had my headphones in, and I was just grinning, right? Like, the song came on, and I was just so full of emotion and so happy, and I think that people thought I was crazy, but I was just like, hey, smiling at everyone as we walked by. But, yeah, so my dad listened to our pilot episode while he was staying with us for a couple of weeks, and he was out on the screen porch, kind of sitting on the sofa, taking it all in, didn't say much, didn't have a whole lot of reaction on his face, was just like really serious. And it was time for dinner, so I called him in, and he just gave me the biggest hug ever.
Oh, wow.
Near tear-eyed. I'm just like, I am so proud of you. I've never been so proud of you. And for a moment, I was like, wait a second, like, I'm a doctor. This is what you're proud of. But he was just like, I never knew you could like speak like that. And yeah. I think that comes from just, you know, being able to talk about stuff that I really love. And so it was fun to see his reaction that way.
That's great. Well, I got a similar text from my mom, and she said, it sounds great, looks good. Shivani has a lovely voice.
I think it's a constant takeaway.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Curious for you, Brandon, how about your family? And I know your mom is, you know, she sent you a couple texts.
Both my parents and my mother-in-law, who's like probably our most avid listener. I mean, she listens to it before I do. As soon as it's released, she's like, all right, let's do it. It's great. It's great. And she talked about the Furu episode. I'm struck by, so I think we talk about, this is so far outside of my comfort zone. I'll speak for myself. Shivani, I think you feel the same way. Mm-hmm. But there's this great Ralph Waldo Emerson quote that always do what you're afraid to do. Mm. And I'm struck with kind of, as they talk about upbringing, so we're always being, and I think part of it has to do with being an African-American male, where it's like, you don't get second chances. So you got to be very conservative, risk-free, don't mess up. And so you're kind of afraid to step outside of your box in a lot of ways. It's like, I'm a lawyer. I got to be a lawyer. I got to do corporate. And so doing this, push the envelope, I wasn't sure how people were going to react. And then we put it out there, and just like the feedback was so amazing. Even my kids who listen to Wow in the World podcast, and they, mm-hmm. you know, they love podcasts. They're like, Daddy has a podcast, and it has a song.
It's
a great song. So it's been, I mean, it's just been great. And it goes back to, sometimes you just have to do what you're afraid to do, and that's being courageous.
Yeah. Yeah, we were recently on a long drive, and Bars hadn't listened to one of the episodes yet, so we put it on, and the kids were playing in the background. They were doing all their own thing, and all of a sudden, my son looked up and was like, Mommy, is that your voice? Is that you? Are you on the car? Yes, that's me, baby. He's so proud.
That's great.
Big and Kavi proud, who just turned 4.
4 years old. Big bad 4.
Wow.
Well, I'll turn it to you. You know, you're kind of the brainchild. You've done a lot of legwork around this. You make it easy for Shivani and me to do this.
That's
so
for sure.
What sticks out to you?
You know, I think it is that really putting yourself out there, and you think, like, I've facilitated and been in leadership work for the last 8 to 10 years, but this is totally different, you know, and you're all of a sudden you're on Apple. Then you see it on Spotify, and you see your logo, and then you hear your voice, and you're like, oh, wow, this is now out for the whole world. But I think who you build it with is what we have talked about is so important. And we recently, you and I, Brandon, had a very deep conversation about, you know, it was about race and it was related to the episode about Ufuru and how, you know, especially me being a white male, there's a lot of advantage and privileges I have around being optimistic about things. And I, to what you just said, I can take more risks. And then hearing you talk about just the burdens of loads you've had to carry as a black male. And I was sitting in a parking lot in Isle of Palms Park, and I'm sitting under a tree, and I honestly, I started crying. And I just, because it occurred to me that this was much more than a podcast. And it was the first time I noticed even me getting anxious about how many Instagram posts are we getting? Who have we sent this to? How many? And then I was like, wait a minute, that's not what this is. This is just what we have. We had to categorize this as something, right? We, Western society, we got a podcast, YouTube, right? You got to call it something so the masses can get to it. But for us, it's like this opportunity to learn and grow. And after that conversation, for me, it was just like I felt my heart had expanded. I understood you more, and I've known you 8 years. And Shivani, you and I have recently had conversations about personal history I have around trauma and healing. And so I just, that's the part for me that I keep trying to remind myself that this is what this is.
That's, well, you got deep early on. I didn't know we were going that deep this morning. But I will, to talk about this, that conversation we had, there's a lot of learning. I think a lot of times you take it away is the burdens that I have experienced, yes, in my role. But what I took away from you is that, you know, maybe I have a good support network. So maybe these burdens that I'm feeling, I can share with someone. Or maybe I can let them go a little bit and step outside and still receive the support. And maybe some of that, I'm able to put some of that risk to the side, or I would say adverse risk taking to the side. So I thought that was a really good conversation.
Yeah. It gives me the sense of like that sense of safety and security, right? Like even when it is a little bit outside your comfort zone, when you know that you're in kind of safe hands or a safe environment, even for like when you talked about with trauma, right? Even when you've experienced that, if you have a safe, comforting place to go, you can kind of deal with it and process it more as well.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think maybe that's actually, I didn't think about it till now, of what is like when you are in a very much a growth environment and you are putting yourself out there, when you have a very safe group of people where we can make mistakes, right? And we've made mistakes on, you know, things I've said, you said, but it's like, hey, I can also challenge you from love. And Shivani, knowing too your background, I just, you know, over the years you've shared different things on resilience and trauma, and I was like, oh yeah, no, that makes sense for what you do. But then in some recent personal work I've done to recognize, you know, that there's things I went through, that was also what was meaningful to me, because I was like, there's no accident that we're in this conversation, that you've been sharing these things with me. And I would just love, I never have known like why you're a physician, you're in pediatrics, but why children and why the passion around resilience? Like what's important to that about you?
Oh, that's a big question. I have always been drawn, even as a kid to other children, right? I always thought of myself as working with children, whether it was as a camp counselor or in some type of teaching format. And I very quickly realized I can't be a teacher because I'm no way able to like control a large group of people. Right. Like they're not going to listen to my voice. But I
we are all listening.
Yeah, that's right. Everyone loves your voice. Yeah. The irony.
I appreciate
in that.
It. Yes. However, children do not always listen to me. I'm not a scary person by any means. Sometimes my own children either. But I had lots of early experiences I hinted at with my brother. And so being around hospitals, being around healthcare, there are things that I love and things that I absolutely was very scared of. So even during residency training, like there are parts of medicine that are really hard and really tough, and I don't function well in those spaces. But what I love is getting to know families and really talking about like early growth and early brain development. And a lot of that stems from the work that I've been doing around adverse childhood experiences and learning about adversity and trauma and how these things actually shape and form our brains and change how our body functions very, very early on. And the ability to know that while that has deep, profound effects in our brains, in our bodies, generationally. So when we're talking about generational racism and how that affects, you know, down the line, our actual genes and how much work that is to reverse, that there's also this beautiful thing called resilience where you can build it. It's not stagnant. Right. You can foster these really comforting, like you've heard me talk about, like healthy adult relationships, right? Like how important that is. We're talking about mindfulness and good nutrition and moving your body and sleeping well, all the things that are great for all of us, but for a kid who's experienced some type of trauma or adversity, like how you can build that all in. And so that has definitely become one of the things that I have become very super passionate about. And that's why John heard it from me for so long. I'm like, hey, John, you should read this thing. Hey, there's this talk you should really listen to. Because it's all, you know, all of the resilience stuff is great for any of us. But when there is this story behind that, remembering that story and not necessarily having to talk about it all the time and recount that story all over and over again, but it has this depth and meaning that can bring good things and sometimes not so great things to that child's life.
Right. Yeah, that is that's a powerful statement. And I'm struck by, so I'll rewind a little bit. So a lot of times in society, I think we feel like adversity is a good thing. And there's something about, oh, I overcame this. And so you start comparison. Well, I've been through this type of adversity and you've been through, but you haven't been through my level of adversity. And so I'm curious from the work that you've done and the research, it seems like there's more power in the resiliency. I am glad that there is a way that even if you go through some adversity, and I'm thinking about children in this instance, there's a way that you can build up that resiliency so there is light at the end of that tunnel. But I'm just curious as how society normally thinks about going through adversity and these sort of, I have the war scars to prove it, but it's really about resiliency. And I think that kind of goes on the radar, but just curious your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a certain level of adversity or stress is necessary, right? Like if you see a bear, your body is designed to run because you don't want to be around the bear. And so having that level of stress is important because we learn how to respond to things that are scary. But it very much is the resilience, right? So one of my favorite people and like superhero is Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris, and she wrote the book called The Deepest Well and does a lot of work on this resilience space. And she even said, like, you know, Spider-Man was an orphan and X-Men lived in a group home, right?
All,
like, right?
They
like
all start
these
with resilience.
Build their superpowers based on their stories. There's, and so it's that. Not that it deems you this like person who's not going to be able to overcome anything. It actually can build in and harness your superpower by reflecting, right? Those kids that are in scary situations in their homes are constantly so vigilant, right? They're really able to perceive people in situations and scenarios. And so they can use that and harness that as adults and really be able to see people in situations and feel the room really well and very fast.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Can I hog with another question, Don? Or is my question time?
Go ahead.
I was just curious. So we're coming out of COVID. How has COVID affected in your work that you're seeing? Just how has COVID impacted all this? I assume there are lasting impacts.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff coming out now about just the trauma of COVID and the pandemic, whether it's actually seeing death and illness in your family, being afraid of death and illness in your family, having the economic struggles of having to quarantine or be socially isolated from work or school, what that's affected from an educational standpoint, a social network standpoint, and also just, you know, the families that maybe the kids are in situations or adults are in situations where there is violence or, you know, unstable mental health or drug use in a home and then being stuck there because you're not allowed to go out to the places where you might have had a little bit of relief from that. So all of that has, you know, definitely had this compounding effect on trauma and what that means for a child or a family.
And I hope, because I think what it's done for me and a lot of people, as I talk to a lot of mental health professionals, is that a lot of people have begun to see things, right? Because they've been forced to slow down. And that we're, you know, some of these words might become more mainstream. And, you know, this book, right? Oprah Winfrey and Dr. Bruce Perry, it's called What Happened to You? And I believe that now, hopefully with somebody like Oprah, these words, because a year ago when I heard the word trauma, I just put it to the side. And now I think there's this idea of, can we be trauma aware? And if you just take away the word, the T word, and just said, what happened to you? How can we be informed by what happened to somebody mm-hmm. versus what's wrong with you? And I think in schools and in healthcare, and I'll say for me personally, there are things over and over that we can take a lens to of what's wrong with this person versus, hey, what might have happened to them? Mm-hmm. And just that question shift, that kind of strengths-based approach has been really transformative for me, because then it can lead to, you know, what are some of these root causes? And I was very aware, just, you know, being working through my own sort of history of how much is like actually in the brain, right? And you and I talked about my own sort of sometimes hypervigilance and my own sort of always being on radar. And that relates to a lack of feeling safety for some things that occurred with me. But as well, you helped me see that it can be a superpower in social intelligence and trying to sense what's going on with people and their emotions. However, if I don't have an off button to that, like I'm always on radar for, oh gosh, is everything okay with right. Brandon right now? And you, and that can wear me out. Yeah. And I think the important part when I heard you talk about resilience too, is like coming out of COVID as well, I'm sure for both of you, is like creating environments of healing. And I was really struck in the book about what Dr. Perry said, because not everyone can afford certain treatment levels. And Oprah point blank asked him, and he said, you know, it's in traditional, you know, in society and much in the past in our history, there were a few things that really helped. And one was being, to your point, in dialogue mm-hmm. with people and not always rehashing all the things, but maybe bits and pieces where you feel, you know, heard and seen and an understanding. And the second thing, which really hit me at my core, was rhythm. And he said that, you know, drumming, music, and dance. And so what I remember telling LP7 and Britt, in particular LP7, who plays the violin, when they played the song, when I hear the violin, you know, it's hard for me to not somehow get emotional, because right. I can feel her expression, right? I can feel the rhythm and almost the body of work that it's taken for her to put into that. And that is extremely healing. Like a 3-minute violin song for me can take me just to a totally different place. Right. And then one of the other things he said was values, right? Of just really doing something meaningful every day. So I hope this becomes more, and I hope through your work, and yeah. that's why I'm excited to be in partnership with you throughout this this journey.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely speaks volumes to like how, as the world opens up a little bit more, how well we do with that, right? Because people have had very vast differences and experiences right. of what this pandemic has meant, and so if we don't remember to ask what happened to you yeah. in those spaces and allow people to reflect and have that dialogue, and we just go back to the old normal, we lose this tremendous opportunity yeah. to grow and be stronger together because of what happened.
I agree. And you know, going to, we've got Atrium and Novant here, mm-hmm. so much, you know, in our healthcare systems to be able to do that. And Brandon, I know you all at Novant have been doing so much, you yeah. know, in your response. But so now, you know, knowing you for a long time, you know, right. I knew why you're a lawyer and, yeah. you know, deputy chief legal counsel. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
But I've seen so much your connectivity in the community, which is no accident that you would be so interested in this work. You've been so involved in the arts. But why, you know, what was the first time a light bulb went off that the law profession might be something meaningful to you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to come back to that question because yeah. I do want to stick with the Novant Health really quickly.
Yeah.
What you'll hear sort of in my answer to your question is a lot of purpose driven and it's sort of always having purpose. And I found that when you have purpose and you think of it as a trip, an end destination in mind, you can make decisions that don't seem to make sense if you're going exit by exit, right? Mm. You can take 2 steps back to move forward, or move laterally to move forward. And so it's always sort of purpose-driven. And so I found coming to work in healthcare, specifically at Novant, has been the culmination of kind of my purpose. So I was born in one of our main facilities here in Charlotte. Yeah. My grandfather, who I was extremely close to, and I credit a lot of my value system to him, both my grandfathers, but particularly to him because he's just this gregarious personality. Mm. He was cared for pancreatic cancer and ended up passing away under the care of Novant Health. And then I come work. And so I've seen, and this is what's so impactful to me, healthcare, nothing against financial services, which I also worked in, but to Shivani's point, if you think about in the walls of our facilities, we are ushering life into this world, caring for it while it's there, and then allowing it to leave this world with dignity and respect. Mm-hmm. And there's no bigger mission than that. That weight, and it's only heightened in COVID. And so for me, even though as an attorney, I'm not really actually at the bedside, right? But that purpose still fits with me. And so to answer your question, when was the first time I knew I wanted to practice law? To be honest, there's no profound answer. I actually went to law school because I was afraid. I didn't want to go into the real world just yet. that's a real answer. That's a real
answer. Did you put that on the Duke application?
I did not. I think they knew, though. And to be honest with you, I didn't think I'd be a lawyer this long. I thought I'd be doing something entrepreneurial, philanthropic. But what I found was that it was a great way to impact change, and it really fit sort of my mindset and thinking about risk management, and coming up with creative solutions, and just being a strategic partner. So that's why law school the legal profession has worked out.
Well, it struck me. I wrote down here when you were talking about healthcare and the work in Novant is that you said something about we're ushering life into this world and letting it leave with dignity. I hope I got that right. Yeah. We can always record it back and figure out what was actually said. But when I heard that, it connected me not technically being in healthcare as maybe I am in healthcare.
Right. Mm.
And that maybe that's what really we're trying to do together here is that I have a responsibility to my fellow human beings to create environments of healing and to do that in my own way. And I thought about education it's not even, I don't have children right now in the public education system, but I'm deeply passionate about that because I believe the education system's a part of me and a part of our community. And I just think is the more we can think that way, you know, whatever your craft is, but maybe we all have a responsibility for creating a healthy, healing community.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I definitely see what you said. We talk about being in healthcare, like being there on people's best days, right? Like children are born and their worst days, right? Even if it's maybe a minor illness test, but it's the worst day possible if they're bringing their loved one into the hospital for whatever reason. And that responsibility is so huge. And I love that you really are thinking about purpose, right? And there is a long vision when you're doing the work that you do, because if we don't do that, right? Like if you think about politics and everyone thinks by terms, you know, you're making decisions that make sense for right now, but that grand vision of what makes sense in the future is so huge. So I love that you bring that to your daily work. And I think all of us could probably learn to do that.
Yeah, I agree. So I was asked, it's probably been 10 years ago now, sort of what my purpose was. And I'm curious your answers on this too, because I don't really know what it is. It just seems like a loaded question. But I gave them three quotes that I feel like kind of embody it. And so I was actually going to share this with you. See, and I think this sums up kind of how I go through the world.
Yeah.
And I think it's sort of what we're doing here. But the first one is attributed to Gandhi, but we're not really sure if Gandhi really said it. But it's still a great quote, is be the change you want to see in the world. Mm. A lot of people know that one. Mm-hmm. The next one is C.S. Lewis. Integrity is doing the right thing, even when no one is watching. Mm. And then the third is a Ralph Waldo Emerson. I've quoted him several times today. But to know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived, this is to have succeeded, right? Mm-hmm. And so those three quotes to me sort of capture everything, right? So being the change is not enough to talk about it. I actually have to live it. And I can't just live it on a podcast. I can't just live it when I'm in front of team members or when I'm at work. I have to live it in those moments where no one's watching. Mm-hmm. And it's only me and this one individual where I could dismiss this individual, no one would ever know. But the integrity is, when no one's watching, what do you do? And so that's always stuck with me too. And then at the end of the day, what really struck me about this Emerson quote, which I actually gravitated towards him after going to a funeral of this guy who I could say his name, but I won't, privacy, in the community passed away. And his funeral was amazing. There were just people from all over the community, different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And you can tell a lot by how someone lived, by who shows up at their funeral and what their funeral looks like. And this quote was on his obituary. And I looked around and was like, wow, that's right. Because we've all benefited from him being alive. And it's just, he succeeded many times over. This is the measure. So those are a few quotes. And I'm curious. So that's kind of how I think about my purpose. And then I have these value systems going back to your community service. So I was taught very early on that to whom much is given, much is required. And so my parents instilled that into me. And so service was always a part. It was kind of like a no-brainer that this is what you have to do outside of your schoolwork. This is what you have to do outside of your job. And then I would also say family is incredibly important to me, as well as education too. So,
just that.
Yeah, that's a lot. There's a lot. There's a lot there.
Can we drop these microphones, Brian, to see how we'd have to throw them off the table?
But I'm curious your reaction on the purpose, because people always ask you that. What is your purpose? And I find that so hard to kind of define. Or
yeah.
And it changes, it seems. So those are kind of key themes I've come up with.
Yeah, it certainly shifts. I love that you have encapsulated them into quotes. I think both of you guys are like my quote masters here. For myself, I think purpose has always been very child-driven, right? So like, if we can create a space, an environment that is allowable for like the optimal achievement and growth of a child,
right?
And every child, right? Not just my children, not just the people who I know and I'm close to, but thinking about true equity and allowing for every child to get to their best potential. Like, any work that involves that is where I thrive. So my colleagues joke that I say no to nothing, because people will be like, hey, there's this thing. And I'm like, yes, we should help immigrant children. And like, hey, there's this other work that's involved with food insecurity. Like, yes, absolutely. Because it's not just one thing, right? There's so many things that affect a person's life, whether it's their insular environment in their home or in schools. And so that's why, you know, education work is so important to me and my work at communities and schools. And then early childhood and that formative years of how much brain development happens in the first 1,000 days of life.
Right.
And so how much work and how much investment do we have in kids that are 0 to 3 who literally like don't even have words yet at the beginning. But we have so much responsibility to those children. And so I think anything that really is driven towards optimizing brain development and language and connectivity and having resources, but really maximizing potential is where I say yes.
That's great.
It hits me. You know, I was listening to your voice and to what you were saying and how calming and soothing your voice is. It occurred to me how much you are living your purpose.
I agree.
Because I can think about you walking, I can think about me sitting in a doctor's office with a young child or my family and you walking in and like what that immediately creates, the disarming nature of your voice. But the reason to me your voice sounds like that is because what's coming through your heart and your spirit. And I love that. And I think that's so important. And Brandon, when I heard from you, the word that came to me was character, right? Is this, you just have such high character that whether you're at work or at home, like you get the same guy. And I just think that's what I've learned so much from the past year and a half from you and this crisis. I've said it before, but crisis reveals character, right? And so anyone can be great when things are good, but when it's tough or you're out with friends, do you still have the same values? Do you still treat someone really well? And I think that's tough, right? It takes courage, because a lot of people say, well, hey, we're with friends or we're in this environment now, you can bend the rules. And for me, that there's just no question, right? That's the game worth playing in life of how can I really, you know, declare and share my values, but then go out and honor them. And, you know, getting back to your question about purpose, I'm going to try to read this quote without getting too emotional, but this quote sort of probably encapsulates mine, and it's from Oprah towards the end of the book, and this is what she says. She says, "My pain and the resolve that followed it became a cycle that would repeat itself many times. I believe it is, in a profound way, the very through line of my life. The struggles I endured as a child are what allowed me to recognize and care about pain in others. The validation I longed for as a child is what I see other people longing for just as intensely. Thousands of people had the courage to share their stories with me because their story was my story. Their pain was my pain, because all pain is the same. So in that quote is really, for me, is just the idea of inspiring and agape humanity, and that we are each other. And I love that word agape, because it's the universal love for other humans. Right. It's more than romantic love. It's more than brotherly, sisterly love. It's just, hey, it's kind of like, I think, how you see patients and families. Right. And so, yeah. Yeah. Your question got to me. I didn't know we were going to go
trying,
there.
I was trying to get you to drop the tear.
Good. No, well, I don't know how much money is on this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But
I'll give you a chance to recover, because I do want to say, you know, just, and I'm curious, and this is part of the discussion we joke about, you making career changes, but you were leadership consultant, facilitator. People would not expect this looking at your size, but you were an offensive lineman in college at Davidson, playing football.
Could be featured tailback now if the Panthers are listening.
That's right. So as you think about that, and you written in the context of that quote, how has that led you up to this moment in doing mm-hmm. this? And everything you're doing now with Reimagine Schools, being board chair of the Communities and School Board, mm-hmm. everything you're doing.
I guess the blessing and the curse, as we talked about, Shivani, right, with sort of the way my heart is, and for those people who are interested in personality profiles, you know, I've got a 2 Enneagram plus a 7. A 2 is just deep empathy, right? And so I think the story of my career in life has been, once I see something, I can't unsee it.
Right.
Mm.
And I tend to just be motivated to act. Mm-hmm. And not from helping, saving, all those things, but just from, I too could feel that level of pain, you know? And so once it just becomes to a place of where I'm growing, and I've grown so much through knowing you and our men's group of having half white guys, half black guys, and understanding things I didn't go through. And then, you know, learning what it's like to be an immigrant in this community. And then also just being sort of a creative entrepreneur person, you know. And then December, I got diagnosed with ADHD. And so I've learned that my brain is just really has a ton of ideas. So I think the things that have brought me here has just been constantly getting close to people who think differently or whose experience of the world is different from me. And once that happens, I tend to say, how do I then get involved, or what's a way I can honor that? And the only thing I really know best in this world is that deep connection. And so for 8 years as a leadership consultant, it allowed me to do that. And then as we talked, it was something that I felt like there was something more out there. And even over the weekend, I thought, what would it be like if all I did was focus on this podcast and writing? What if, like, I didn't facilitate or consult anymore? Would I be more focused? And I don't know if that's where I'm mm-hmm. going, but that's sort of how my brain works. Got is it. How do I get really lasered in on what I deeply care about, and do it in a way that is meaningful and that can also create an income? Because I'm not someone who's, you know, I'm not money motivated, I'm impact motivated.
Right.
And if the impact is there, I believe it's hard, but I try to operate this way every day, that resources are abundant.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a level of privilege and advantage in saying something like that, but it's hard to operate that way when it's uncertain and you don't know what the next 6 months will look like, but it's enough to have this crew here. So,
you know, you have one of the biggest hearts of anyone I know. And, you know, if I think about cardiac health, nerd science coming back. But right, we do cardio workouts. We work our heart to make sure that it is doing everything it can do and should do to make sure that our body is running. But your heart does that, and it grows and it grows, and it pulls in these stories and it pulls in these people, and you see not just feeling, but you see action and mission in those spaces. But even the heart has the ribs to protect it, right? And so what I've seen now is that you are creating these protective factors, right? You're growing for yourself to make sure you protect that heart, but still allowing it to work and do all the things that it needs to do. And I love that, because you're doing it without even realizing it, right?
Well, y'all have been a big a big part of that. If it wasn't for your husband, I wouldn't have gone to get testing to understand how to be in the right environments. And I think if it wasn't for you pinging me on these, you know, stuff about resilience and trauma, I might not have picked this book up or found that somatic healing work that I'm doing now. And so I'm grateful for that. And it is good to kind of sit back just like we're doing today, right? And say, oh, okay, yeah, I am making progress, yeah, right? And I have made changes, and we have together. Right. And I think in a year's time, who knows where we're going to be, right?
That's right. That's right. What I do love about you, John Davis, is that you don't let people get by with staying at the superficial level. And at first, it like really annoyed me, because even if you're at dinner. I'm going to give you an example. Yeah, just have dinner. I was going to give you an example. So we're at dinner, and we're like, oh, this is a good dinner. You know, everybody's having a superficial conversation. And John's like, all right, guys, like, okay, we're going to have a deep conversation. And he's like, I want you to look to the right and tell that person what you really admire about them. Mm-hmm. And then the person on your left, or maybe I got the directions wrong, the person on the other side, tell them what an area they could improve upon. And this is just a social dinner. Uh-huh. And it just so happened, John was sitting on one side of me, my wife was sitting on the other side, and Kirby was the one who asked to say what she thought I could improve upon. It was funny. It was all the same things. I'm going back to, it was all the same things, right? So John's like, I love that all you do in the community, you're always doing that. And at the time, I was really filling up the community bucket. And it was something that I was felt like I was lacking in my job at the time. I didn't have that purpose, so I was filling up that bucket. But what Kirby, my wife, said was, well, the flip side of that is that I don't feel like you're as plugged in as you need to be here with us. And that was just like, whoa, I didn't even realize that. Mm-hmm. And since then, I recalibrated and reallocated those buckets, and now I feel like I have a great equilibrium. Mm-hmm. But we wouldn't even have had that discussion if John hadn't facilitated this dinner.
The social casual dinner.
And so I hope, one of my biggest hopes coming out of COVID, and I hope this with my friends, is because I've had some really real in-depth conversations with old friends that I never had before. I was like, well, are you really talking to me about this right now? And I think it's because of COVID. And so I hope we can get more, and this is what we do with our men's group. And Shivani, I know this is aligned with your work, is how can we talk more about not just, oh, I'm doing great, you know, this is what I do for a living, but really, how are you doing? What do you struggle with? What do you feel like? It just real conversations that are in depth. And I feel like you do a great job of pulling those out of people. So I will say that for you. Going back to the big heart.
Yeah, no, it's great. I appreciate you saying that. And I think that's part of what we're going to get to do here. And today, this has just been an incredible conversation to just get in here and chat and, you know, have some thoughts, but not just let it flow. And I'm so excited about that. So I did have a, I thought this would be fun as we,
I knew it was coming.
Okay. Best song I sing. Oh, I'm just kidding.
Goodness. Well, yeah. You know, now that he said the whole music thing and rhythm, I feel like we can't not let him sing anymore.
No.
Yeah, I really think Brian already has asked me, Brian is our producer here, that I should probably do some contracting of intro songs, you know, and maybe that would be a good idea, a side hustle I could have here.
Okay, you mean by like getting other artists to sing them, right?
Other artists who can sing, right?
All right, so I want to try this. I'm going to play with this kind of rapid fire. So don't overthink it too much, and I'll answer them too. But when you hear, these are our themes, right, of catalyst, creativity, and courage. So the word catalyst, who are, we'll start with you, Shivani, one to two people that you just think about, whether in your life or someone else, the word catalyst.
So, goodness, I mentioned one who is a colleague. Who allowed me to do the catalyst work in my workspace, is Sarah Horseman, and a very dear friend of mine, Archana Patel, who lives in California, who has always inspired me to think bigger and think deeper about every aspect of my life. So,
what was his name?
Archana Patel. Her name. Yeah.
beautiful. Her name, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so first I'll give the good answer. My wife, she's definitely been you're a catalyst.
So now I'm going to be in trouble with Bars.
Yeah, no. Yeah, we're creating dissension between the
rival. Kirby just texted me.
We've known each other since high school. And so going back to high school, there's stories we could tell of her being a catalyst in my life. But sticking with high school and going back to Shivani's definition of it not taking away, was this high school teacher I had who I thought did not like me the whole year. She was always hard on me, tough on me, until when I graduated and she wrote something in my senior book. I'm not even sure how she got my senior book, but she wrote something in my senior book that I think we talked about. It's just like, you have amazing potential. I just hope one day I get to see it. And that stuck with me to this very day. And she doesn't even know that just writing a sentence in a yearbook has been a catalyst for my life and caring for it. Mm. And I think I told her recently, but I don't think she knew that, you know, that little amount of work was a catalyst in my life.
Mm.
And so that's another example, along with many other families and friends. I feel like I'm going to leave somebody out. my mother-in-law.
The Grammy music.
We'll just
playing.
Say this is a dot, dot, dot.
Okay.
Right?
Yes,
there are
exactly.
lots of those
yeah,
people.
Sounds good. Okay.
Today, maybe we'll just focus on catalysts till we can, you know, because I'm sure with these, with creativity and courage, we could do a ton. But I'll say for me, I'm just leaving this group of friends. And in particular, when I look at what helped me, so I was in the IB International Baccalaureate program in high school, and there was a couple times I really wanted to quit. And now that, you know, I know that my learning style was very different, my friend, who's a doctor, Dr. C.J. Stimson, he's a urologist at Vanderbilt. There was a time in high school where he would always come over and study with me. And I didn't want to study, but he was just there, and we would have fun. Like, we made, like, the hard stuff fun. We joked about it. And, like, I went from not doing well in history to getting A's to making jokes to the teacher before the test. Like, oh, we have a test today? And he'd get a little irritated, but he knew. And without CJ being a catalyst for me and really, you know, just sticking by my side, I think about where I'm at 30 years later because of somebody doing that. And I'm just grateful for those kind of relationships, you know, that the group of friends that I saw, you know, we averaged 32 years and knowing each other. And that's hard to have. And so I think we're going to have that, right, as we go forward through here. So any closing thoughts? I know we'll let it rip here and rock and roll, but anything y'all want to say as we close out today?
So Kirby might have been texting you. My wife might have been texting you because that's exactly why I thought of her a catalyst. I was in the IB program too. She was in it, and I had similar thoughts of like, you know, why am I doing this program? I can do AP. Why am I doing this, spending this extra time? But she was in it, and I was kind of like on the, you know, I did enough to get by, but she was very studious and sort of, and she was like, hey, we're gonna hang out, you're gonna do your work. so we would go do homework, but it was
Shivani's
fun, right?
Like, yes, that's how
I was that person. Yes.
So actually, when I started dating her, my grades improved, like you're saying.
Wow.
And my parents were like, oh, we love this girl.
She's great.
Yeah, she's great for you. So your story, it just resonated me. And I think, again, going back to connections, that you never know until you start talking. And we talked so many times, and that has never come out until now. So
yeah. Wow.
So I don't have any closing statements.
That's good enough there.
I think it's just been really fun to, like, share and talk more and do it in this space, which is always unusual but so great to just kind of have these conversations and get to know each other a little bit better, even if we've known each other for a long time. It's always something new around the corner.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm. Well, and I do think, Shivani, you have the teacher bone in your body. Because I saw it, if you're listening, when Brandon was saying Kirby did that, she was over here saying, yes, that's what I do.
Yeah, yeah. She was giving me encouragement.
And I just want to leave our listeners today with a challenge to maybe go a little deeper. Like, how will you make room for someone close to you and really understand, you know, who they are, what they've been through, what happened to them, and what their strengths are and their superpowers. And it's just a beautiful way to continue to honor each other's humanity. So thank you for making room with us today.
We invite you to continue making room with us. You'll find this episode and all of our exciting and meaningful conversations on Apple, Spotify, or really anywhere you choose to listen to podcasts.
Join the Making Room movement and get more info at makingroomwithus.com or follow us on Instagram at Making Room With Us.
Thank you for showing up for us and each other. Until next time.
You are wonderful and full of truth. Just as you are. Just as you are. You are wonderful, so full of truth. Just as you are. Just as you are, just as you are, you're welcome here just as you are.